You're listening to Mentoring Developers, episode 76.
Welcome to Mentoring Developers, the podcast for new and aspiring software developers, where we discuss your struggles, anxieties, and career choices. And now, here's your host, Arsalan Ahmed.
Hi, everyone. Welcome again to Mentoring Developers. Our guest today wears many hats. He is a CTO. He's a podcaster. He's a solution architect. He has done consulting. He has done a lot of different types of work, and he has achieved a lot of success in a very short time. His name is Noah Labhart, and I think you're going to enjoy this discussion because we're going to talk about how he got to where he is, how he got to start, and how his story can inspire you if you are a new or aspiring software developer or someone who likes technology, wants to get into it, and not really sure how to do it or how to achieve great heights. I think this episode will help you. So I hope you enjoy this. I hope you listen to it until the end and give us your feedback at, you know, the website, mentoringdevelopers.com. You can also send us an email at us@mentoringdevelopers.com. Let's get into this episode right now. Hi, everyone. Welcome again to another episode of Mentoring Developers. Today, I have a special guest. His name is Noah Labhart, and he is an entrepreneur. He is a CTO of a startup, but he's also a fellow podcaster. Welcome, Noah. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
It's really good to have you. We want to talk about so many things that happened to you, how you started. You have a very interesting and fascinating career because a lot of us would like to be in your place, let's be honest. You're doing some cool stuff. But what I want to start with is something that happened to you, something that was pivotal, and let's talk about that. What is the thing that happened?
Absolutely. So, you know, in 2015, I stepped out of my own. I've been working in tech for a while, decided to step out onto my own into entrepreneurship, and took on a pretty decent sized project, but a fully remote project where my client was in New Hampshire and I'm in Texas. So I was in DFW. And brought on a few developers to help me to build a sort of online platform with mobile apps for a salon. I don't know anything about running a salon business or how apps should work or interact, but I know how to write software. So I thought, I'd run many projects before. I thought this would be a piece of cake. Did the project way too low. Did not have enough money to cover the expenses from my developers. Worked for a while, got some of the product built and essentially ran out of money and had to go back to the client and say, hey, I cannot deliver this for you. I can't get it developed. I can't develop it by myself. I can't deliver it for you the way that you want it in the budget that we allotted. And that was my fault. And I tried to give her all the code that I had written something for what she paid for, and she didn't like that at all. So, we started to talk about legal conversations, about getting lawyers involved, and ended up I had to refund all of the money that she had paid me for my personal savings. And that was my first project out of the gate into the entrepreneurial world. So it was a it was a tough start, tough start to get out into the world. But I learned so much from that experience. I would never want to do it again. But I learned so much that helped me throughout the years.
Okay, so for listeners who are listening to us or viewers who are watching right now, and they're not really sure exactly the parameters of what's happening. You're talking about going out on your own, starting a consulting company. Mm-hmm. And in that consulting company, there's companies out there that they need some work done so they could hire another firm or another person to do it. And now you're starting this new company, you have people that are working for you, and together you're building this thing for somebody. They're paying you for that. Now, there are two ways of doing that. You could charge by the every hour that you work, mm-hmm. or you could charge a fixed price based mm-hmm. on what you think the work is. And so there are two ways of doing it, and there are arguments on both sides. And most of the time, you're paying by the hour. So if the work goes over, then that's not necessarily your problem, because the client will have to pay for that. So that's why a lot of companies, most companies, like to do what's called time and materials. Now, for you and I, we know this, but a lot of people who are starting out, they're not sure what that means. So time and materials is usually how it goes. But sometimes it could be very lucrative or risky in your case. to just assume you know everything about what needs to be done and all the parameters and all the variables, and give a fixed price without any clauses in your contract where it give you an out. So that's what happened to you. And that changes. So, but you survived that. I mean, you didn't give up. You didn't say, oh, goodness, I'm not cut out for this. Let me just get a job.
Right. Right. Yeah, we stuck it out. And I say we because my wife was the one who was telling me to, it's going to be all right. This is part of the journey. You learned a lesson here, and now let's get back up and go figure out how we're going to do this thing. So she gets all the credit for me crying in the corner. and making sure that I got up to keep going. But kept going and learned a lot.
That is fantastic. I think, and then in a few short years, you turned it around, right? You became quite successful. Would you consider yourself successful today?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I've definitely had some wins. I'm very happy with the wins that I've had, the successes that I've had, being, a CTO right now at a startup, a growing startup, a thriving startup, which is great. A podcast host myself, having done the consulting thing and run an agency, I learned a lot from that. Got to work with a lot of interesting projects and people. I wouldn't go back and change it. I wouldn't want to go through some of the things again, but I'm happy where I'm at. Yeah.
Yeah. So for a lot of people, they get lucky and their first project is amazing and they get a good client that goes for a few years and they just get lucky, but you can't expect luck to happen to you every time. So if there's somebody out there who's maybe has some experience in software development and they're thinking, maybe I could do that because maybe there are no good jobs, or maybe you just feel like you can be your own boss. And there are lots of people who are well suited to this, but they're not sure how to get started. So before we go into more details about how you started, which is really what I'm interested in learning about you and sharing with the audience, I do want to know if you think that someone who's starting out in consulting or trying to work independently in some fashion and getting paid for it and making a living out of that, do you think they need to have a good deal of experience behind them working in companies and dealing with the issues that come up, or could they be just people who know programming and they just want to start?
Sure. That's a really interesting question. Certainly, if you have the experience, right? If you've done the things, if you've lived through the projects, if you've made the mistakes and come out on the other side, you're going to be more equipped. But I don't know that it's exactly necessary, especially these days with so many resources out there. There's so much at the, at the click of a mouse or the typing your keyboard into Google. There is endless resources out there about how to, do some consulting or go do a project for someone as just a software developer. And so I don't think that you need to have this vast many years of experience to go out on your own. What I would say, though, and this is something that I did learn from that project and something that I would have wished I would have told myself. But now that I know it, I know that I wouldn't have listened back then. And this is the only way for me to learn it. I wish that someone would have told me or would have known to start small. To not bite off more than you can chew, to start with a project or start with, you know, something that you know. And from that, find your successes, right? So take a project. So just example walking through this, take a project and complete it successfully, right? Deliver it, make the money, and then, you know, have that win under your belt, and then take on a little more, build on that success, and then grow with those successes, kind of grow with your successes, with your growth. It will not be required that you have all the experiences if you take that approach. That's what I would say to people jumping out there on their own, is like, just take it one step at a time.
That's really good advice. Another thing that comes to mind is the idea that you are an expert in a certain technology. So if I know a domain, a type of business, and I know a little bit of programming, then I think it's a very lethal mix. I think it's very, very, very good for a client to have someone who knows a type of business really well and who knows some programming. Versus it could be someone who's very good at programming but doesn't have knowledge of a particular domain. So what we like to do sometimes is we like to say that you have to diversify a little bit. So you could either diversify in technology or you could diversify in industries. Right? As someone starting out, if you have figured it out, then you don't need to listen to this podcast. But the people that I am concerned about are people who are who haven't figured it out. So what do you say about that? Is it a good idea to focus on a technology? Because what can happen, I can tell you, you can talk to a customer, or you can go to a business conference, or some place, somehow you found somebody who has a problem, and they don't know how to solve it, and you can offer a solution to them. If they are completely blank and completely not really versed in technology, or they don't have any technology and you're just creating new technology, then you could use whatever technology that you're good at. You could be a PHP developer, for instance, and they won't care. But if there is an existing business with an existing infrastructure, let's say they're a Java shop and they have all of their investment in Java, and but you don't know Java. Maybe you're a Ruby developer. And so at that point, you can say, well, I'm sorry, I can't do this because I don't do Java. Or you could say, but I have expertise in your domain, so I will make it work with you. I'll learn it enough that I can make it work. So you see the challenge here with people when they're starting out. Would you pursue, if you go back to your old self, would you pursue those these types of clients where the technology was a mismatch?
I definitely, well, it's interesting because there's kind of, I have two answers, I would say. So Noah, I'll answer as Noah the developer and Noah the agency owner. Noah the developer would pursue all of it. And I think that the reason is because at the end of the day, if it's PHP, if it's Java, if it's .NET, if it's Node, you know, if it's JavaScript, if it's a language, there are, you know, similar structures, similar, you know, ways to instantiate variables, ways to go object-oriented, right? You can as a developer, you can quickly learn the nuances of a language. So I think Noah the developer wouldn't hesitate to be like, yeah, that's in .NET. Maybe I haven't done .NET in, you know, 5 years. But I understand programming. I understand your domain. I understand, you know, what type of problem you're solving. So really it's just about, hey, I need a couple hours to know what the syntax is to do X, Y, Z, and then I'll go develop it. So that's Noah the developer. Noah, the agency owner that, you know, had a team of mobile developers, native mobile developers, and a point of view on mobile development that was siding with native mobile development over, say, Cordova-based, web-based type mobile development, or even cross-platform React Native stuff, would have pushed towards clients that were either native only or wanted to go native or were okay with native. And that's because that's the team I had. Could we have branched out and done other development? Yes, but the people that I brought on were passionate about native development, and that's why I brought them on. So there's kind of mixed bags there. But as Noah the developer who's going out and doing consulting and doing projects, I'd say I'll go learn what I need to, because I understand the domain, if that makes sense.
It does. So yeah. So when you are starting out, some would say you can't afford to say no. So just say yes to everything and keep going until you are in a place where you have your feet on the ground solidly and you know what you're about. There is a very good case for specialization, because sometimes that helps you differentiate yourself from the crowd.
Right.
If you are a developer, then you are one of millions of developers and there's nothing special about you, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you have to, if you say you are a developer for insurance companies, or you develop a certain type of application, maybe you create courses for universities, and maybe not a programmer per se, but you use technology to create courseware.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Very, very specific, and then you can target that. So there's some benefit in that. But when you are starting out, you shouldn't be wedded to a technology, right?
That's right.
You could, and then it would become easier over time, as long as the client doesn't mind that you don't have that experience. So all good stuff. So now let's go back to what we really wanted to talk about. This is great. I didn't expect to be talking about entrepreneurship, because that's personally a topic that I love, because I tried to do it. I did some independent consulting over the years and never quite succeeded, to be honest. But we can talk about that at some other time. Right now, I want to learn about you. So when did you become interested in programming? When was this moment for you when you were growing up, when you became aware of computers, programming, things like that?
Sure. It's interesting. I actually didn't get an actual computer until I was a junior in high school, and didn't do programming at all, really until the middle of college. So I got into school and started off doing computer engineering at Texas A&M, and was doing basic engineering courses, and was not too focused, I'd say. We'll put it in a nice way. Not too focused on going to class these early years. Didn't do too well. Ended up changing majors to applied mathematics. And it was applied mathematics towards computer science. It was really math. I hadn't taken any programming classes yet, but I lived with a computer engineering major, one of my really good friends named Rylan Barnes. He's a successful tech entrepreneur, and I would watch Rylan code in our dorm room. I would just create things, you know. It could be something that was a little artistic, or it could be, you know, he built a textbook trading website for the A&M campus, built projects for his classes and things. And just watch him do that. I was like, this looks really fun. It looks really creative. I'm a creative guy. I'm left-brained and right-brained, which means I have a lot of headaches right in the middle where the left and the right brain meet. And I watched him do that. I was like, I'm gonna try. I'm gonna build my own personal website where I can just put some pictures up, and that'd be fun. So I did that, classic HTML, JavaScript, CSS stuff, you know, and got real nerdy with it. And it was really fun. Then I started taking in some of my computer science minor classes, did some Java, did some C++, cut my teeth on that. And I just really loved it. It made sense to me. Made sense. So once I started doing that, I really started getting into the coding aspect of my minor. Got to my senior year and was getting ready to graduate with an applied mathematics degree. And I was like, you know, I don't want to go be a professor. I don't want to go get my master's in math. I don't want to go be an actuary. I don't want to do any of that. Statistics was really interesting to me and still is. But I didn't want to go do that full time. And so I decided to stay another year and get a computer science degree as well. And go through the full gamut of the senior classes. And at the same time, I was also working as an intern with Hewlett Packard. And so I was doing .NET development sort of, you know, semi-professionally. So I saw what that job would feel like and look like. And so I was like, yeah, I got to do this full time. This has got to be my job. So that's kind of the story where it started.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Some people start early and some people start late. But all of us can arrive at the same destination and within a very short period of time. It didn't take you 20 years to be where you are, and so that's really good to know. A lot of people that I meet, they are undecided.
Sure.
Their majors are not declared. They're not really sure what to do when they're in college. Some people are in high school. A lot of times what I see is that people are just not interested in programming because they've been told by so many people that you have to do STEM and they have to do STEM. And it's a visceral reaction. Like, I'm not going to do what I'm told. But I see that with my daughters, by the way. I have small daughters, and when they were young, I had some influence in them when they were younger. And my daughter started programming with Scratch when she was 5. But now she's 10 and she's done. She's done with that. but potential. I see she has potential. I see other people. It's so much potential, but they don't see the point of it. And then part of it is because I'm telling her that's a good thing. So she has to not do it. Right.
Right.
But right. It is a good thing, folks, because the world is becoming, is running on software, and whatever is not being run on software will be run on software very soon. So if you're in high school, if you're listening, you're in middle school, high school right now, by the time you're working, you should know some level of software development. It may not be programming, maybe something else, but whatever it is, you need to deal with software. So if you're in on it, if you start, that's what I tell everybody. If you start at 10 and you start working through anything you want to do, but it's in this case programming and making software, making things using computers, then by the time you're 20, you do 2 hours a day. Start from when you're 10 years old. By the time you're 20, you're going to be an expert. You're going to be so much ahead of everybody else. And then... because you have the time. Unfortunately, between 10 and 20, you have so much free time. From 20 to 30, that's a lot less. And 30 to 40, it just gets worse. It doesn't get better. So my advice to everybody is to, if you feel like something you, programming or anything else, any other skill that you are good at it, just pursue it as soon as you can. Spend some time and learn it. And if you don't use it, that's fine, but you can always come back to it.
That's right. Totally agree with that.
So you got started in college, and by the time you graduated, you had this computer science degree, which is great. And you live in North Texas, right, where jobs are not a problem. You have tons of jobs for computer professionals, and there are lots of companies. So one of my favorite places to live as a tech person is in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I think it's just fantastic. I've been there many times. It's lovely to go there and meet people. And I've never heard of a person struggling to get a job there. So that's
there are quite a few.
Yeah. But did you get a job after that? What did you do?
Yeah. So after I graduated, I went to work for a company called Software Architects. They're no longer called that. They're called Sagetti. They were bought by Sagetti. But a smaller sort of Dallas-Fort Worth-based consulting firm doing .NET, ASP.NET development. So I did that for about a year. Got to work for Pier 1 Imports as a consultant and build a couple of things for them, some internal systems for them, and sort of did the projects on my own with one other person. A couple other people that were, you know, points of contact at the company. So it was a great experience. I had to sort of manage myself. I had to design software. I had to build it. Had to get approval for things. And it was a really good experience. I had lots of mentors around me, some older folks that were consultants working on different projects, but they could speak into what I was doing. So it was really helpful too early on in those days.
So it's funny because I know a few people who have worked for that company, software architects, and they have gone on to do great things. Okay, so that's good. You got your first job. You worked there for a little bit. At that point, were you thinking, you know, maybe I could do this myself? I could probably, if I get a client, I can do this myself. Or what happened after that? You left the job, or you got another job, or what did you do?
Sure. Interesting. It's an interesting turn of events. So I was playing in a rock band and I left Software Architects to go work at Alcon Laboratories, which is in South Fort Worth. I worked for Alcon for 8 years, which is interesting. As a software developer, Alcon is very much a big corporation, right? It's more IT, it's more buy versus build, more configuration. I was playing in a rock band that was closer to my bandmates, was that job. So I went and worked at that job. Great company. I learned a lot, and I still did software on the side. So the .NET development on the side, mostly for my uncle. He's a entrepreneur himself and needed .NET development done occasionally on different projects. So I kept my chops up that way, but also learned project management, also learned managing a team, managing budgets. You know, as I moved up the ranks at Alcon, I learned a lot of sort of entrepreneurial or say business related learning. Got my PMP while I was there, got my MBA while I was there. So I walked away with a lot of rich knowledge to put on top of or pair with a lot of my development skills that I was keeping. So I worked there for 8 years before finally leaving in 2015.
That's great. So for people who are listening and wondering what a PMP is, what an MBA is, so let's just describe it quickly. So MBA is easy. You're sure. Getting a degree in business administration. It helps you manage teams, I suppose, in larger corporations. And PMP is a certification where you are, well, why don't you describe it?
Sure. So PMP is a project management professional. So through the PMI organization, Project Management Institute. So you have to sit in a 4-hour exam and 200 or 300 questions. I don't remember. But a long exam, and you have to essentially prove that you know everything there is to know about project management. And you study the PMBOK. It's what it's called. It's a Project Management Book of Knowledge. It's about 2 inches thick of project management stuff. So I went and did that and learned a lot of different project management methodologies. I don't use all of them every day, but I use the foundations of that as a manager, as a developer, as a project manager, all of it. So it was really helpful just professionally.
Okay, let's talk about mentorship. Now, a lot of times when people are starting out, they don't have anybody to look up to. Usually your dad's not a programmer, right? Usually what happens is you're just starting out, and you could be the first one in to go to college in your family, or you could be the only person who's interested in technology. So what would be great if we had a system of mentoring new developers where you, when you start at a job, there's an organic group, or maybe it's a very systematic way of mentoring people where they can, let's say, for the first 6 months or a year, someone is assigned to help them along, make sure they're successful from the point of view of the developer, not the point of view of the company, because mm-hmm. that's what usually happens when they say, when they assign you a person, is supposed to watch over you and not to help mm-hmm. you. So that's the different attitude. Did you have any kind of experiences like that where you had some kind of mentorship, somebody you could look up to, talk to, and would guide you?
Sure. I did. And, you know, they were different. It was different every time. You know, when I was working at Software Architects, there were some senior consultants there that really kind of spoke into, you know, how the things you want to look at and learn and pay attention to be successful as a consultant. And not only just as a consultant for Software Architects, but as a software architect for corporations, or as a software architect for building solutions. So they were able to speak into that early on. For me, when I was at Alcon, it was a little more, my managers ended up being my mentors. A couple of managers were really influential in some of the things that I went to do and to learn. Chris Gianetti at Alcon Laboratories is one I can mention. He definitely pushed me towards the PMP, towards the MBA, and gave me a lot of opportunities to say, okay, I want you to go figure this out because I know that you can. I'm going to help you along the way. I'm going to coach you. I'm going to ask you the right questions to get you thinking. But he definitely put me in the right places and introduced me to the right people to where I could make a name for myself. From an entrepreneur standpoint, a lot of the mentors that I clinged to, or however you're supposed to say that, were other agency owners. Not even development agency owners, but just other sort of entrepreneurial business owners, design agency owners, friends that I could kind of talk to and be like, hey, this is where I'm struggling. You know, what did you do for X, Y, and Z? And that didn't really help me in the coding arena, but it helped me in the survival of entrepreneurship arena. So I think mentorships, I think mentors are critical. And I like that you said not sort of company assigned mentors. I honestly think that although I had some company assigned mentors and they were great, I think the best mentors for me personally have been the ones that are outside of the company I'm currently working with, because they don't speak into the agenda of the company, which all companies do. And those agendas aren't bad things, but they speak into the individual, right? Like, okay, this is what's important to you, Noah. And this is where you are struggling. This is what I might recommend you do, or this is a question I would ask you to get you thinking along these lines to see, or to get you to think about outside of how you'd solve this for the company, but how would you solve this for yourself? And so I gained a lot of insight from mentors outside of those companies.
That's good to know. So if you are starting out, someone who's listening, who's starting out, they don't know how to find a mentor like this in a different company, what do you think? What should they do?
You know, I would advise them or suggest that they just be bold and find someone who they look up to, one, but who are doing the things that they want to do, and ask them how they did it. And, you know, it's a very flattering thing to be like, hey, I want you to be my mentor. I think you're doing really great stuff and I want to know how you did it and I want to get to where you are. Could you help me? You know, and sometimes people will be like, thank you. I don't have time to be a mentor, and that's okay. You know, don't be afraid of rejection like that, but because it's not really rejection. It's just like, I don't have the bandwidth. But be bold and just ask. Find the people that are doing what you want to do, and go ask them how they did it.
Right. And to find those people, you may have to go to, excuse me, you may have to go to meetups, other events, where conferences and so on, where people go, right? Because mm-hmm. they're not in your company. You can't really usually waltz into another company's office and ask for mentors, but you probably meet them in common places. And usually meetups are great, code meetups. Now, these days, that's a little challenging.
Sure.
But because we are trying to avoid having these live meetups or in-person meetups. But what I've noticed is that a lot of these in-person meetups have been replaced by online meetups. And a lot of times it's a lot easier, to be honest, to approach somebody online.
That's right.
So
yeah.
We could use that to our advantage. Now, someone starting out, or let's say that you're starting out, what advice would you give to your own self when you're starting out as to how you could, let me rephrase that. What would you do differently if you were starting out?
Sure. I've thought about this before. What I would do different, or what I would tell myself, I'd go back and say, hey, shake my shoulders a little bit. I would tell myself to be bold. To go do it, to grab the technology, learn it as much as it takes to start building, and then learn it along the way. Find a problem and go solve it. I think that early on, I still struggle with this a bit. Early on, I would get caught up in, I don't want to go build that solution because it's probably not going to amount to anything. Well, it will. It will amount to something. Even if you build it and no one uses it and you throw it away, you have learned a ton from building that solution, from solving a problem from beginning to end. And it's not about, it's really the gains that you get as a developer. It's not about the delivering the product. Now, as you do that more and more, you will see successes in delivering those products and people using them as well. But just jump out there and build stuff. Grab the technology, learn it enough, and go create something and put it in front of people. And don't be afraid to hear feedback. So, yeah, be bold.
Yeah, I think feedback is very important. We don't want to, we want to learn the truth about us, how people are observing us, what's their feedback on our work and also our presentation. And there's so much help out there because a lot of people are willing to help. They just don't know how to do that. So sometimes you just give them the opportunity to help you, which is great.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, so then you became a CTO, and that's a big, that's something big. I don't think we have the time today to go into all the details of how that came about. But before we close, I do want to ask you about your podcast. How did you get started in that? What made you want to start a podcast?
Sure. So I was having, there's two reasons. One, I was having all of these conversations with CTOs, peer conversations of how do you solve this, or, how are you approaching scalability in your solutions and XYZ. And I was like, hey, I'm having all these great conversations with great CTOs. I should record them. I'm sure that people would want to listen to them. And at the same time, I am kind of a podcast junkie. I really like how I built this with Guy Raz. And it was very inspirational and how I've crafted some of the stories in Code Story, which is my podcast. But I started it because I really couldn't find that type of podcast just for tech, and not even just for tech, but just for startup tech. I wanted to listen to a story about, from the CTO's perspective, from the tech visionary's perspective, of how they experience the human experience creating products. And tech is a part of that, right? Because as CTOs, as software developers, as tech visionaries, that's our tool, right? That's our hammer. That's our nails, is the technology. So we're going to inevitably talk about technology. But what I'm really after is, tell me the human story of what you went through when you built an MVP, and you were thinking about scalability, when you, when you decided to take on some technical debt and use a framework early that you knew you were going to scratch later, right? How was it building a team? Did you run into any bad eggs? How did you go through that, right? What would you go back and say to your former self, or what would you go back and do differently now that you know what you know? But it's really about that. It's like the human side of tech tech development early on in the startup. So I didn't see a podcast out there like that. So I was like, you know, I'm going to go do it. I'm going to go build it myself and see what happens. And so now we're 40-ish episodes in, and it's really fun. I get to have the coolest conversations with CTOs about the stuff they've built and learned about their stories and what they were feeling, you know, how they approach different problems. And it's really fun stuff.
Yeah, I think that's always a good reason to scratch your own itch when you're starting out in something. And this is how this podcast started. I wanted it to exist, so I made it happen. It's a very good reason.
I like it.
People who are listening to this right now, I was listening to you attentively. Hopefully people are also paying attention. So you mentioned a couple of things. We want to make sure we untangle those terms. You said MVP and... there was something else you said that I don't remember right now, but an MVP is the minimum product that you want to build for a new idea or maybe a startup company that solves the smallest set of problems, but it's proves the concept, right? The
idea
is that you're not wasting time building something massive that nobody wants. So that's what MVP is. Mm-hmm. And there was something else that I don't remember. I should have taken notes of that. But with this podcast, one of the goals is to explain every term. Because a lot of times we throw terminology expecting people to know. And that is good. I know it and you know it. But new people get intimidated by that. And you would be surprised how many people have told me that this has helped them tremendously. When they listen to my podcast, they know that they will get all the content, but we will explain it a little bit so it won't be so mysterious.
So yeah, that's great.
That's good. And I'm glad that your podcast is doing well. What's the website where they can find it?
It's codestory.co, or they can just search Code Story on any major podcast directory.
Code Story. So if you're listening to this and you'd like to know how people design their architecture, I suppose, for startup companies, if you're interested in startup culture and tech around that, I'm sure that you'll enjoy the podcast Code Story. And you're in a rock band, so for me that's very interesting because I'm not in any band. I'm not very good, but I'd like to play guitar. So what do you play?
Sure. So I've played guitar for 16 or 17 years now. So I played lead guitar and I was backup vocals. Our band is actually still on Spotify, so you can check it out. It's called Withheld. It's like a female-led hard rock band. So it's like an Evanescence kind of thing. But yeah, we're still out there if you want to check it out.
Well, that's good. What kind of guitars do you have?
I have some hanging on my walls right here. I have a PRS McCarty 22. I've got what's the other one here? I've got a Martin acoustic. I used to play. I've sold a bunch of them because I don't play in the band anymore. But I used to play some Schecters. I used to have three or four Schecters that I would kind of do some custom humbuckers in the bridge and rock those because they look really cool. I've got a American Telecaster as well. Probably need to get rid of some of these because they're just kind of sitting around now. But yeah, I've got quite a bit.
That's good. But it doesn't look like you're a whammy bar kind of guy.
No. Yeah, I'm more of a pedal kind of guy. I had a huge pedal board, had wah pedals and had a lot of ambient delays and stuff and some really thick distortion as well.
That's nice.
So yeah, I like to get creative with that, but no whammy.
That's good. Yeah. Once I discovered the whammy bar, I'm not good, folks. I'm not trying to say I'm good at anything. I'm not, but I enjoy it a lot because it is... I am just blown away by what you can do when you float the bridge. But anyway, enough about that. Well, it was really fun having you here. And thank you for taking the time to share your story with us. I think that we really would like to have you back to talk about your journey as a CTO and some of the struggles that you're going through if you have the time.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. I'd love to come back. This was really fun.
All right. And check out this podcast, his podcast, Code Story. And I will see if I can check out myself. All right, folks. Talk to you later.
Thanks.
If you are a new or aspiring software or web developer, I highly recommend you listen to the Mentoring Developers podcast. I've listened to most of the episodes, and I was fortunate enough to find it, to discover it early on in my education. I was looking for a podcast, something audio only, that I could listen to while I was exercising each morning, and all of the other podcasts that I found were far too technical and frankly, just over my head. I didn't understand what they were talking about, and it was just very discouraging. So when I found the Mentoring Developers podcast, I felt a lot better. It made me feel a lot more confident, a lot more comfortable, because the Mentoring Developers podcast is speaking to people like me who are new, very new to software and web development, and trying to make their way and trying to understand all the different technologies and tools and words that are unfamiliar. So it's a terrific, terrific resource for anyone who is just getting into this field. And also the host, Arsalan, is providing a service which, as far as I can tell, does not exist. His podcast is one of a kind, and he has done a terrific job with it, and I'm very appreciative of the podcast. It's a service to the community. So I highly recommend you take some time and enjoy and learn from the Mentoring Developers podcast.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.